ちゃうというのもいいです。
Good morning, sir. You're appearing before your own board today. You come and see this morning in reference to a request for a pardon. This board listens to the applicant's indication like this and the determination whether or not we're forward to the government with the recommendation of Brand. But the government is the one who makes the ultimate decision. And whether the government now are in input, but according to his rules, they all have to come through here first.
Okay.
So I'm here to see the board to conduct the hearing this morning. To your far left is the Honorable Michael Johnson, the Lord Honorable Bill Rittenhouse, the Senator John Dr. C.T. Wright, who is our board chairman. To my right, or to my left, is the Honorable Lincoln Anderson. My name is David Lee, the hearing this morning. So, will you please state your full name? I don't remember your ABC number, but
I do.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Jimmy J. T. O'Dell, 128439.
Okay, sir. All right, so you saw a parole tonight. It really is your record. I don't think that you ever may have been asked for parole or anything and served your time and community supervision and whatever it was and all that's expired.
Correct.
Okay. So the board is the funding group that makes determinations on currently it's truth in sentencing releases. Everybody calls it parole, but it's a little bit different. But when you have to make a violation, they end up in front of us and make a determination when we leave and put it back out. We do parole hearings and commutations and all sort of stuff. And as with the parole hearing this morning, we learn a little bit about violations. But that's what we do. And then, we do get requests for pardons. So because the process is a little bit different, most everybody else that comes in front of the board has had some other than meditation, they've had some appearances and it left a long time ago when the board started to get familiar with somebody and learn a little about them and better make a judgment as to whether they've rehabilitated and stuff like that. We don't have the pleasure of your presence in front of any board, so I'm not going to be too picky or too particular or ask too many questions. But what I'd like to do is, first I'll tell you that pardon is not something that expunges anything from your record. Okay, so we'll get into the reasons why you would like to have a pardon. In a little bit, but so you understand if you go through this. If the board were to forward this to the government office and the other government were to grant you a pardon, it does not expunge it from your record. It will always be on your record unless you get a court to order an expungement. And that's something that's done by the court, not by this board or the government. So I think you understand that. A pardon doesn't get rid of it. They talk about all these pardons for the president and everything. That doesn't. It's always going to be after this person was found guilty of something, and it's just a matter that whoever grants that pardon says, okay, you're released from responsibility. If you're in prison, you're out of prison. You're out of prison already. So to say that, all right, you basically we're saying you did and you didn't do it.
Okay.
When it's expunged. But if you go to an employer somewhere, a background check's not going to bring that up. They have to do something like a top secret background thing. I'd like for you to do is kind of tell us a little bit about yourself back in the day you were in trouble. And you don't have to give a lot of details or anything, but kind of walk us through that period of your life and your time in prison. And then the more important part would be what's been going on since you got out of prison.
So I'm from Phoenix, and my parents were separated when I was around 2. And I lived with my mom up through about 4th grade and had some trouble at Catholic school with behavior, and my mom didn't donate another thing they asked us to leave. So I went to public school and moved in with my dad. And it was a more strict household. I had a half-brother that lived with us, and by the end of my freshman year, I just was butting heads with my stepmom and went running to my mom and decided it would be easier to go live over there in Glendale with my mom. And there weren't any real rules at that house. And then I quickly fell into it. I also played at sports my whole life and was in accelerated classes and was a high achiever at sports. And then when I moved to my mom's, it was a whole different bunch, and breaking into that soccer and wrestling club, being the new kid, it was just a bit of a struggle. And then instead of struggling and going through it, I just started hanging out with the crowds that smoked cigarettes and drank. Got into drugs, started getting in trouble, and my drug use just progressed very stereotypically. I started drinking beer and then harder alcohols, and then smoked pot, and then just started experimenting with cocaine, and eventually landed on my drug of choice at the time, which was crystal meth. And from there, I started my criminal history, just stealing and then selling drugs a little bit to supply my habit of doing it. There was no get-rich-quick scheme or any method to that. It was just to continue using drugs. And I never had a job, so that's how I paid for it. So I went in and out of jail a few times, did probation a couple times, and ended up that the last time I got in trouble, I don't know, it's just like the perfect wake-up call. My house was being watched by a special assignments unit, and I had a girl on a motorcycle, a cross-rocket motorcycle. And at that time, my mindset would have been to run and flee. But they had multiple vehicles, and the van that was originally following me had turned, so I thought I was alone again, and I looked at the drive-thru of the Jack in the Box on Thomas and I-17. And before I could exit, a big truck pulled up, and the guys jumped out with guns and tackled me off the motorcycle. And I don't know, I had a gun, I had drugs. Had I run, I probably could have killed me and the girl that was with me. And so, I don't know, the professionalism of that special assignment unit probably saved my life. And so I've done nothing but good with my life since. That was in 1996. And so I served just under 4 years in prison. I took college courses that I applied for grants and scholarships while in prison, and did mail-based. I would mail my assignments in and they would mail me new ones. Got out in 2000. Met my wife the following year while going to school at Mesa Community College, working, putting myself through school. She's here with me today. We're still married from, we met in August of 2001 and I think got married a couple years later. We have a couple great kids that are 11 and 13 year old boys. I almost brought them today. I thought it'd be, they know about my past, but just thought it might be a little bit long. They're on their last day of spring break, and so I didn't bring them up. Since getting out, I've gone through all the processes. I've got all my rights reinstated, my gun rights. My family and I hunt together. This year will be the first year putting my kids in to go hunt with us. I participate in volunteer programs like Adopt Arizona Adopt a Highway. We have a mile. up by Globe. Did the Valley Big Brother Big Sister program. I still am in contact. I'm not actively in the program, but I still have the little brothers that grew up with me. I've actually been through the pardon process a couple times, once under Governor Napolitano and once under Governor Brewer. Both boards looked favorably, but in both of those cases, the governors didn't give their decision until after, like right when they left office. So it's like they left office and they both decided against me. In 2005, I started working for the state of Arizona, for the Arizona Department of Health Services, just across the street from the park here. I'm still with them today. I've had a progressive career. I'm one of the IT database security. I'm considered the security expert. I was in a data security position before that. All the people that, when I originally got hired, that knew about my past, most of them are gone. There's a couple IT people, but not management. So it's like, all that's a different person. It was even interesting signing in as an inmate when they asked if it was an inmate or a victim. I was like, well, no, I'm not a victim. So coming before you again, I know Governor Ducey has expressed interest in supporting reform. Since he's come into office, one of the things he did that was impressive is when you're applying for a state job, it doesn't ask you if you're a convicted felon anymore, so you're not judged on that first round. I'm sure there might be questions later, but at least I feel like he's helping out to help us some of that recidivism, help people get on with their lives. So I hadn't originally planned on trying for a pardon again, but it is closure. It is a big step. When I apply for a job, and I do look sometimes, state government's getting pretty thin, and it's sometimes hard with the lower budgets. So every now and then I look around. And if I apply for a position, even though it's been so many years, it would be nice to say, yes, convicted of a felony, received a pardon. That would be a big deal to me, and it would make me feel more confident with employers. So for those reasons, I'm before you, feeling that Governor Ducey is supporting reform, and I'm a pretty good poster child for reform.
Well, thank you, sir. That was a very good summation. So you say when you were arrested by that special officer, why exactly were they after you with that type of an operation? Because that's, you know, you got to be somebody pretty notorious and bad for to do that.
Well, that's still up for debate, but if I'm not mistaken, my older half-brother got arrested for some drug-related chop shop thing, I don't even know. And what I heard was he told police that I was selling drugs or doing something more than what I was. And so they started watching this house, which I didn't frequent very often, but that I was renting. And so, I don't know, I was on a probation violation, so I've talked to a couple of those officers since then. I've checked in with them every 5 or so years. But that's not a question I ever ask, is why were they targeting me? I think it, my brother gave them my name, to be honest.
Okay. I was curious. You said you had a gun, you said you had drugs, and you've been dealing some and things like that. So it sounds like you had enough going on, especially if somebody, you know, pointed a finger at you. And I have to come in and do it, instead of trying to do something with one or two people, we've got a, you know, suspected drug dealer that's got a gun, or they've been told has a gun, and it's like, let's do this the right way so nobody gets hurt, you know, they don't wanna get hurt, but it's always good professionals, and they're not only concerned about their own safety, but they're concerned about the safety of everybody else involved.
Yeah, that's a good rule.
And, yeah, I investigated traffic accidents for about 10 years, and a young guy on a crash rock and with a woman behind him, that's a dangerous thing for both of them. But, so anyway, you're to be commended that you did make that turnaround, a lot of people just continue on down the wrong path, you know, over and over and over again, and they keep doing the same thing, they wonder why they don't get different outcomes, you know.
I still follow quite a few of people from high school. A couple have died and a couple are still going in and out. Sometimes I'll pen pal with them a little bit. I always like to stay in touch.
Well, if you're staying in touch with them and they're staying in trouble, encourage them not to.
Oh, I do, trust me. Yeah, one of my grade school friends, we actually, my whole family would visit him after it was down off the border, I forget the prison, but he actually is one of the ones that's gotten out. He's been out about four years now, but it took a little bit of work for me to get on the visitation, as you can imagine.
Right.
Another thing I did was get my fingerprint clearance card, which was also, I think that was probably harder than getting my gun rights back. Gun rights, I applied a couple times and I got them back, but I had to sit before a judge and at the DPS office and go over every minute of every detail.
And you got it. You got a number one.
Yeah, so I got that. We have a home daycare, so I wanted it.
It's not always easy for people who have never been in trouble to get a number one card.
Right.
So, so really, basically, since you turned your life around and you've gotten some education and now you got experience under your belt and everything else like that, so the record hasn't been, I'm sure when you first got done with everything, it was detrimental because, I mean, there's a lot of places who look at you and they'll hire felons, but if it's a violent crime, they won't. I've known a couple of people that had aggravated assault on their record, and they try to work in home care. And nobody will hire them because they're, you know, they've got to be a long way down the road before they consider you safe to be around people that can be very aggravating and everything. So the basics of it is like this, it's more of a personal thing rather, I mean, as far as kind of like an accomplishment to be able to clean your record up and be proud of the fact that you did turn your life around. It's more of that than the fact that your job won't let you go any further without something else.
Well, I don't know exactly. When you apply for a company, a public-private company, you do have to disclose
right.
that. And so I don't always get calls back. I don't know if it's because of that or my qualifications, but just it would give me a little bit more confidence. I feel like that's a bigger deal. I try and put charges dismissed, judgment of guilt vacated, all rights restored. I try and add those line items currently if I apply. One liner, Governor DC pardoned this, would I feel set an employer at ease.
Okay.
Not to dismiss the closure part too.
I'm see if my fellow woman had a question at this time. Mr. Rick,
yes.
Mr. Canales.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. And good morning, Mr. Bell.
Good morning.
I just want to point out to begin with, you're clearly a success. You're the sort of story that we hope for when people finish their prison sentences or granted parole or come out of community supervision. Pardons are very delicate and they're not granted very freely by the governor's office, and I'm not really setting this up to tell you how the board's going to vote independently. I just want to make sure to get the positive note out there. that you've done quite well. And I think my colleague already leaned into this question, but right now in the state of Arizona, is your conviction keeping you from any advancement?
I personally feel there is a chance. It's hard to say. That's not a measurable thing. You know, if I don't get a call, I would not receive a call from a prospective employer that said, because of your past, we couldn't move forward. They just don't make the call. So, I had a job offer about 5 years ago from PetSmart, and I was told by their team, because I disclosed it. I disclosed in the interview my past and said, I want to make sure you guys are okay with this. Don't offer me something and have me leave my position and then rescind it. So they said they go back 10 years for that company, which I'm well beyond that. So the time probably helps me out a lot, but I do feel, again, especially with the data security, I'm a database administrator, we manage the data. I feel like that would give a prospective employer a sense of comfort seeing that level of, because it can't be expunged or sealed, but with a governor's blessing.
And am I correct that you're looking for positions outside of state government?
I don't limit it to anything. I live in Santan Valley and I work right across the street. Mm-hmm. And 14 years of commuting, if I found a position in Mesa, I would consider anything, you know. But state government also has some database positions come up sometimes too, you know. It just depends. But state retirement's a good system to be into.
Well, I certainly commend everything you've done to develop yourself up to this point, and you've done much more than some people who had much privilege in their life up to this point. If I'm not mistaken, you achieved a master's degree.
No master's.
Well, no master's.
I did a college degree, but it was more beneficial to go with computer certifications.
Pardon me about that. I think I may have mixed up an application, but still, I recognize that you did a lot of personal development. So.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. O'Dell, is there a reason why you checked the box that we may not contact your current employer? I mean, you may have explained earlier. You said someone management doesn't know.
Because I have promoted from within over the years and had managers come and go, the current structure to get a call from the parole board might find it shocking, so I thought it would probably just be more comforting to not worry about that.
Just leave it go. Okay. Yeah,
I actually, my current boss was hired from DOR a few years back, and I really wanted to invite him because I felt like he would be interested in this process, but still just the insecurities that come along with the stigma, and I just chose not to.
Okay, all right. Sorry. And then you also, on the next page of your application, you said you do not consider yourself in recovery, but I just wondered if you could explain that, because you said you had used drugs, but you hadn't used them since 96.
Yeah, I don't consider myself a drug addict. I just was being a dumb kid and doing drugs. It's not been an issue in my life or since there. When I went to prison, I mean, not only it was just the light switch got flipped back on to the way I was raised. I quit smoking the same time.
Your behavior in prison was, you know, I mean, you had such minimal discipline. There were just a couple, and they were mostly just either informally resolved, or I think you had one guilty, you know, or something. And so, I mean, you obviously were not a behavior problem in prison. And, you know, what you said, that the light switch flipped on, that would kind of suggest it, that you just said, okay, I'm going to be here, I've got to be here.
Yeah, I think the best dad.
Lay low and, yeah, yeah.
Actually, worked at Hickman's A Branch, an outside program. The friend that I told you about, we had the food visits with, it was a wildland fire crew for the prison. So it really, I feel like those were a benefit to the inmates to get them out and working when they're minimum and nothing.
Yeah, Hickman's has been a good partner, so.
Yeah.
Okay, well, congratulations on everything you've accomplished, because it's really nice. We don't hear this kind of story very often, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
So, but it's really nice to meet you and hear your story. So thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm going to commend you on all the things, but it seems as though I was just trying to see, you know, what has happened to you, but you've gotten your rights restored, you have your gun rights restored, you have a job with the state, you've been able to promote in the state, you have your family and everyone is together, you have your kids, you're going hunting. And what I'm hearing from you is just the main reason that you're not sure if some jobs that you have put in for, the reason you didn't get them, you're not sure if it was because you were, because you didn't have a pardon, but the pardon mainly is just for yourself to make you feel better, and perhaps it may help you in the future with some job application. That's kind of what I'm hearing. I mean, I'm not hearing that not having a pardon has really, it doesn't appear that not having a pardon has really hampered your situation, and you seem to be doing very well.
So, to speak honestly, to be able to measure whether my job applications have not panned out to anything more, I can't measure it. I do feel self-conscious and insecure still to this day when I apply, when I get to that section of the application process. And it magnifies it a little because I know how secure the position is. For example, with the state of Arizona, the database administrators are responsible for the HIV databases, birth records, death records, the state lab, the state hospital, all of that data, HIPAA data, secure data. It's a very secure position. In a private sector, it's just as secure. It could be banking data, it could be any data. So for me, it would make me feel confident, and I also feel it would make a prospective employer feel more confident in me to see a pardon rather than just have me, I mean, some might understand what charges dismissed or judgment of guilt vacated is, but everybody knows what a pardon is. For the most part. So I had resigned myself. This was a long process I've been through a couple times. But again, once I saw Governor Ducey's desire to help inmates and further themselves, better themselves, have a better chance, I felt like that was a door that might open for me. So I'm young, I'm 45, I feel like I've got many years left of IT work in me, and I know I'm probably going to apply for quite a few jobs between now and then. That's sometimes how you move around, you apply, you get a better position, you move up. I'm kind of at the top of where I'm at the state. So my primary reason is that, to help me feel secure when applying for jobs. My secondary reason is personal closure and having that final step, because I have done the rest of it.
Thank you, Mr. Nell. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Nell, one more thing. Could I ask one more thing, please? Thank you. Mr. O'Dell, somewhere in this big packet, the Get Big Packet, I think I read that you had a probation that was revoked.
I did some jail time in 1994, and I got out of jail on probation, And that's when I started hanging out with my older brother and doing drugs with him. And then I had went to a jewelry store on Camelback Road. It's a little bit gray, the details from back then, but I believe this is the time. I was trying to use a stolen credit card. I was unsuccessful, but I got away. But my car, my car was there left. I don't know the details. Somehow my dad was coming back from lunch. It was a 1964 Dodge Dart that was really cherry, so it was a one-of-a-kind car. My dad was coming back from lunch or something, saw it. So he ended up taking possession of the car. But they also found out my identity because of the car, and so I think I just never went back to the probation officer. I had already been doing drugs, but had not violated yet, but it was coming.
Right. So that, but that was before your prison time, though.
Correct.
Okay.
That was in 1994. And then one thing led to another, and that's when the SAU unit was following me, and then that's when I went to prison in 96.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you for explaining that. Quick
little follow-up here.
Yes, sir.
You may already know this, but if it wasn't understood, do you understand that SAU has two missions?
No.
They're the SWAT team, but when they're not on deployment, they're like a special problems unit, so that they keep them active, and they will target, I use the word target, but they'll be put on assignment for some sort of special repeat offender, some sort of problem that may be happening within the precinct. So it sounds like that you were arrested on the second mission, but they're very good at it, obviously, and you said that they were quite professional, and they are. Did you write in your statement that you actually reached out to them? I was impressed with that.
A couple times, yeah. I think there's only one from the original, but he's still, probably like every 4 or 5 years I've called.
Who was it?
I'd have to go back to the paperwork. I look them up every time.
But, they're a very outstanding unit.
So. Yeah, it was complex. I mean, just being a drug user, there was a guy sitting in a car, and then a van drove by with other guys in it looking at me, and I was like, what's going on here? And then the van with the other guys followed me out, but then they turned down the road. And then it was a big old four-wheel drive Chevy or Ford truck that pulled up that had the other two officers. So there was a whole team all triangulated around. And as far as you would think, they would just chase me and call the cop, the regular police to pull me over, but they disappeared. I thought I was alone going down Thomas, and then that other truck walked me in the drive-thru. Yeah, they were very good. Very good.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, it's called a street dump. One thing I want to ask you about, how long have you worked for the state?
February 5th was 14 years.
Okay, well, that 14 years indicates that you got a job with the state fairly soon after you got done with your prison time and stuff like that. You know, it's not like 10 years gap or anything like that.
No, it was 5 years.
It was 14 years with the state, and you're doing database security. Don't you think that other employers would not only, you know, some employers are going to see that you're working a big problem, and they're not even going to look at, not going to consider you. But there are a lot of companies that want to look at the big picture. You know, here you are, wait a minute, you know, it's been almost 20 years since I was in trouble, and I've done all this, and by the way, 14 years in the state of Arizona, I'm in their database security. I would think that without any kind of a card or anything, would still go a long ways to secure a job with a private company that, you know, is looking for, they're looking for your skill set. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily what you did 20 years ago, but your skill set now. And I mean, there's always going to be a diver out there saying, oh, well, you know, 20 years ago he was doing forgeries, so we can't trust him with the database. It's got any kind of secure information in it. You know, wouldn't you think in your profession that if you were, you know, screening applicants that if you really look at the whole picture, that that speaks volumes of your character, without anything to do about, you know, convincing the governor that he should put another stamp on your visa, so to speak?
I like to think so. Because I believe in people myself, so I'd like to hope that that's all they look for is the current person they're looking at before them. But I didn't just have one felony, so I think I had six or seven, so, and I do have to list them out. So it's hard to say, but I'd rather err on the side of caution and get everything I can, and a pardon if I can, and be able to add that to the already good job history and everything else.
Okay. Dr. Ray, do you have any questions?
Yes, sir. Just a question, comment, something. I'm just trying to understand why pardon is so important to you at this point in time in your professional career. You, like my colleagues, I feel that you've been quite successful over the past, I guess I just learned, the past 14 years, you've been quite successful. You've had employment by the state of Arizona, which is not the easiest thing in the world. And you've never been, an assumption on my part, you've never been demoted. But somewhere in your records in the state, paperwork and computer work in the state of Arizona, they know that you have what happened in terms of your criminal past. And I'm just wondering why you feel that this is going to truly make a difference for you to have a pardon at this point. You know, I mean, we just don't, you're unique. Yes, you're successful. Everybody who comes forward is more than unique. Nobody's the same, so I would say that. But you're unique. You had this great record of employment for the state of Arizona. But the other thing that I caught my attention, and I'm not trying to guess what happened, but two governors denied pardons for you, as you say, was at the end of their tenure as governor. But both of them, either one of them could have gone the other way, but neither one of them did. And I'm just trying to get a feeling in my mind why this is just so important to you at this point, because you're already successful. You're already successful. I don't think that, based on what you've said so far, I don't think that you've given an example where any employer had turned you down because of your situation. You kind of feel that, but you don't. No one has just said to you, well, you don't have this job because you had this situation back in the 90s. So I'm just trying to get a feel why you feel that this is just so important to you. Other than making you feel good, we all would like to just erase everything that's going wrong. I erase some things in my life, I just erase everything that's going wrong in my life. But I can't do it, but I'm just trying to figure out in my mind why this is just so important to you at this point in time, sir.
Well, we know it doesn't erase. There's no expunging or sealing, so I can't ever erase anything that I've done. But again, I've read about and seen Governor Ducey being supportive of reform. I feel I'm a very good example of that. Not only do I give back to the community, but I've given 14 years of my life to the state of Arizona and the community, and I feel strongly that this is a step I'd like to take, and I would hope Governor Ducey and the state of Arizona would support me. I feel like it'll have positive implications in future job searches. I feel like it's a big step for myself and my family, and for those reasons, I decided to apply again and come before you today.
Now, your guess, as well as my guess, anyone else's guess, none of us can guess what a governor will do, whether it's Governor Ducey or Governor Burr when she was governor, Governor Napolitano when she was governor. None of us can guess that. Therefore, as a board member, I cannot foresee what they would do. But, you know, two boards have made strong recommendations to two governors, and both governors said, no, at the end of the day, I read the letters that the board members at that time sent to both governors, and while both governors said, no, I can't guess on that, but I'm just trying to see what did they miss? I see that you read the letters that they sent, that the two boards sent to who was on the board at that time. Neither one of us was on the board at that time. And I'm just trying to get in my mind, what could I say different than the board member said at that time could really make an impact on the current governor, so that he would see it different than the other two governors saw it. And I'm just trying to get a feel.
I've never seen a governor openly come out in support of inmates transition back into society. To remove that checkbox on the state application process, have you been convicted of a felony? It doesn't ask you when you apply for a position. I haven't been called on any interviews to find out if they ask you later, but I truly believe Governor Ducey has a different mindset with regard to reform and people like myself counting on it. That's what.
But you don't have any other reason that you want to be granted a pardon by the governor other than just to erase, not erase, that's the word that you've already stated, but to get this behind you, just because it's always going to be there. Pardon will always be there somewhere. You know, if somebody really wants to look back, they can always see that you, the crimes that were committed, and see that you were pardoned by the governor. But that's the major reason that at this point that you feel that it's important at this point in time in your career, at your age, at this point in time, for the governor to consider you for a pardon, sir.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
We'd like to make one comment on what you said about Governor Ducey and his idea about reforming things. He's a reformer, yes. He's not an exonerator. But as for the fact that question's not on that application anymore, it's been that way in California for many years, and it's based on the Fair Hiring Act they have in California. And that's a model. And the idea is, and courts have upheld this, is that in California law specifically states you cannot use that information to make a determination about the person's qualifications and whether or not you would hire him. So you can't even ask that question until after you've decided whether or not you want to hire him. And if people that they say, well, you don't have the qualifications, they never look to see what their background is. And they're not supposed to. And that's that. And it's not just California. There have been some appeal courts that have upheld that type of deal on fair hiring. So I don't want to bust anybody's bubble or anything else like that. Governor Ducey does have, as part of his agenda, trying to make it easier for felons when they're released from prison to get jobs, because that's part of the rehabilitation process. You can't keep somebody in jail and say, oh, you're rehabilitated, then throw them out on the street and say, okay, it's totally up to you now. But there actually are a lot of employers out there that they look at your overall record and they, being a felon isn't detrimental to getting hired with them. And there are some big, very big corporations that are like that too. But it's interesting about that question on an application. But it is based on fair hiring laws and stuff like that, not so much the governor's the reformer. It's been going on in the country for a long time because of big money being lost in lawsuits. So. Any other questions from the board? Okay, sir, at this time, you have some supporters there with you. Would any of them like to speak on your behalf? Or if they would like to, they're quite welcome to. Mm-hmm. Well, it looks on their faces are okay. Yeah, you're on your own, buddy.
Yeah.
no, it's, I understand. Okay.
They would have all the nice things to say.
Well, he said it all. So staff, to, and I don't think there's anybody here in opposition to this. If you'll speak now, forever hold the peace. But so since we've gone through the process at this point, we're nearing the end of the hearing. Before the board goes into discussion to make any kind of determination on this, we'd like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. Tell us anything else that you think might be pertinent to our decision. Everybody on the board have had an opportunity to look at the paperwork, but we don't discuss it at all until we get in the room. And usually the discussion is totally after we've heard everything from the petitioner. So now would be your opportunity for any final statements. And you don't have to if you don't want to, but it's your turn now.
I just want to thank you for the questions and hearing me out. This is something I've specifically worked for. It hasn't affected my, hasn't changed my life. I'm a good person anyway, but it's another one of the goals that I'd like to achieve and for the reasons stated. So appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, well, thank you very much, sir. If you'd like to sit there down at the table while we're in discussion, you're quite welcome to. The board will be going into discussion now. We'll be talking amongst ourselves. We want to address you, we'll do it very specifically, but we'll be talking with ourselves. And so we ask that everybody remain silent, but everybody's entitled to listen to the whole conversation. Open meeting law says that we do not do any of the discussion behind closed doors. So the board is now in discussion. Well, I have to say, Mr. O'Dell is quite the shining example of what our society hopes for in a rehabilitation process. Somebody, and a lot of people make mistakes and get in a lot of trouble. And afterwards, a lot of them struggling with the rest of their life because of their mistakes. A good number of them go on in their lives. The thing is, we don't hear back from everybody. It's kind of like when you're in an ICU unit in the hospital for a long time. The nurses are watching you and everything else, and then you get moved out. They don't know what the final story is. And you know, they can't detect you there long enough not to get put in a bag, and they don't hear the story. And I'm sure that we have a lot of success stories in this state that we don't hear about, but it's very, even if we were hearing about them all, he has a very, very good success story. It's very commendable what time he's been with the state and everything else. But we go back to the idea of when we're going to send something to the governor with a recommendation, it has to be, in my opinion, as one voting board member, way over the top. And the extraordinary, not just exceptional, but the extraordinary. And I just don't feel that the reasons that Mr. O'Dell has for as far as the purpose of the state of Arizona and the way our system is set up, I just don't think it has the, I don't know what to call it, but it's, I just don't think it quite gets to the top. And I just personally, as one voting board member, I would not think it would be one that I would recommend to the governor fall apart. But I'm looking to listen to a discussion from a fellow board member.
I always speak less,
I'll speak briefly. I do have concerns as to whether or not this case meets the standard of gubernatorial approval, and it's not our contrary, I think we've seen the volume of pardon cases and considered the merits of all of them. We've seen some wonderful success stories, and I always want to leave that message, in this case in particular, of what a tremendous success Mr. O'Dell's been. But as far as meeting the standards for pardon, I think that the bar is pretty high, and I again have concerns as to whether or not we're meeting that benchmark. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Nella. And I could just add to that that two prior governors have not acted on it. So,
right.
Mr. Nella. Right.
The only thing I'm going to say at this point, I agree with my colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
This time, based on all the information we gathered here today and the conversation we've had, I am going to make a motion to not recommend to the governor for pardon for Mr. O'Dell. And that would be my motion, not to recommend to the governor.
Second.
Agree.
Motion by myself, second by Mr. Cologne, Mr. Reed, by Dr. Mr. Rittenhouse. Okay, sir, you heard the discussion, you heard the vote, please step up to the podium. We do really want to commend you for what you've done with your life since you went down that wrong path. You've been very successful, and hopefully you will continue to be successful. And keep doing what you're doing, and I think you will be able to retire right old age, and maybe even do database security with older than I am. So, but we do wish you the best of luck. We do thank you for your application and your time here.
Is there a parameter? Is there something just to read up on my own? What would be cause for a pardon? Is that
well, we really can't make that kind of recommendation. For one thing, the board changes with time. If you've made two prior applications, you know that none of the board members now are at either one of those two. So in a month, there could be half the board could be gone, and other people be here because of, you know, their appointed positions and everything. And something like a pardon is really it's way out there, different than most anything else that we would deal with in this. And it's just that, like we said, it's kind of an abstract thing to talk about, but we set the bar really, really high. And usually in a commutation or a pardon, we really look at the why. You know, why are you wanting this change in your status, you know? And for a pardon, it really needs to be a compelling reason for the board generally to move it forward to the governor, and it really makes no difference what our thoughts are other than moving it forward to the governor, because the governor, whether it be Governor Ducey or one of the previous ones or somebody that's elected in the future, it's totally up to them and their staff to look at the overall picture and make a determination whether they want to grant that pardon or not. We try not to second guess Governor Ducey. We do know that he is also trying to continue and strengthen the rehabilitation process. We have way too many people that are out there that can't support themselves, that have been in trouble, and they've just been let down by society and everything. But I'm not going to second guess his attitude about this. It's possible he could, a little different than the other two governors, but we just, based on everything that the board has heard in our discussion and everything, the board currently just doesn't feel that the reasoning behind the pardon or the request is a high enough standard, high enough reason to move it forward to the governor. And there's nothing really that we'd have to, that would change any of that. It's your history is you, like you said. And in a lot of ways, other than personal satisfaction, the pardon's not going to change a thing in your life. So that's how our reasoning is based today, sir.
Right.
Well, we wish you the best of luck. You've done amazing with your life. And we hope that, you know, that we'll be seeing you at lunch around the state for a long time.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Good luck.